the where's that chart? Namaruchi? Oh, there it is. Just above the altar. Very interesting place to put. Is a chart that we'll refer to a number of times during the course of this weekend. Okay, now we have lights. We can see the chart. This is borrowed, or it's a gift, from Sachinandan Swami, who over the past several years has been developing curriculum for an institute, an institute designed for the secular audience, meaning not just the devotee community, but people in general. An institute which will take the teachings of our sampradaya and present them for the general public in such a way that persons who are interested in making their spiritual journey successful will understand how to do so through this institute. I forget the title that he's calling it. What he shared with me is he has some number of devotees, so like a dozen devotees that are full-time engaged in generating the curriculum. In other words, it's a very serious effort. It's not just one of those things. It's an idea that forever remains an idea. But it's something he's putting gears and levers and a motor in it with a steering wheel, and it's moving. And this chart represents a pictorial description of what this institute is intended to do. The institute is intended to show how the faculties that God has given each of us, a body and a mind and a heart, how to align them in such a way that we can reach self-realization or acting from the soul, God-realization. There's a PowerPoint image that shows this, and then you click on it, and then what's at the center dissolves and it becomes Radha and Krishna. So that's our goal. The goal of the institute is to reach Radha and Krishna. And that's the goal of this festival of the holy name, is to connect more with Radha and Krishna in the form of the Maha Mantra. In his presentation to devotees, these perimeter walls are like gates. Those of you that have been to Srirangam know the Gopurams, the seven, just like entering Vaikuntha, seven gates that you have to pass through before entering into Vaikuntha. So here there's only four instead of seven. Each of them representing an entry point, then a further entry point, and a further entry point. And so we sometimes call it the Gopuram chart, but how to align, so the alignment chart, how to align. Could this be turned off? It's noisy. It's nice, but it's noisy. So this morning, I thought a nice place to begin is from the heart. So that's the topic. We're going to come back to body and mind, but the topic this morning is chanting from the heart. I just want to set a framework for that. And the framework that I thought would be a nice place to begin is a verse spoken by Queen Kunti in Queen Kunti's prayers. I know some devotees that are Queen Kunti fans. They really find her to be, and her prayers to be, wonderful models to inspire their devotional service and direct it. So, text 26 of chapter 8, canto 1 is where we're going to begin. And those of you that are familiar with the verse can say it responsibly after I recite it. And those of you who don't, listen to it twice. I'll recite it, and then it'll be chanted responsibly. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri Bhir. Edamana Madak Puman. Naivarhatya Vida Tumbhai. Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. Very good. Let's do it again. Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribhir.
Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribhir.
Edamana Madak Puman.
Edamana Madak Puman.
Naivarha Japida Tumbai. Tvamakinchana Gocharam. Translation. My Lord, Kunti is addressing Krishna. Krishna is standing before her, and this is her words to him. My Lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth and education and attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences. And this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly. O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency, but there's always this but. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely Janma, Aishvarya, Anshruta, and Srivir, or high parentage, good wealth, high education, and attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. See the connection? The fever is not itself the unhealthy. The unhealthy generates fever. So the feverish condition of the living entity is exhibited in attachment to these four things. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. Welcome to the unemployment list. There you go. But they're a nice devotee. Why would Krishna not have them stay with their job? This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Last sentence. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. There's the kingdom of God in the center of the chart. Notice there's a key, because this last door is locked from the inside. Krishna has the key. You know what that key is? The bhakti key. Because only through bhakti can one know Krishna and actually be situated in one's relationship with Krishna. And Krishna holds the key. So I chose this verse and purport because it expresses one of, it's not the only, but one of the principles for chanting from the heart. It doesn't mean that all poor people chant the holy name from the heart. And it doesn't mean that all wealthy people are overly attached to that position or overly beautiful persons, etc. Not overly, but you know, very beautiful persons that they They have to wait for another lifetime. They can't chant from the heart. Only ugly people can chant from the heart. But there's a question of shelter taking. We want to speak a little bit about chanting. What does chanting from the heart mean? There's this conventional expression that says, home is where the heart is. You heard that before? Home is where the heart is. What does that mean, where the heart is? Like, not just, you know, a physical, because we know that from the scripture, the heart, within the heart is the soul. And the home is where the heart is, so that's inside there, that's home. But so it doesn't mean that literally, but it means where you're feeling sheltered, because home is like a place of shelter. This should be. And like the six Goswamis, they had no home. That didn't mean they had no heart. But they saw as shelter the personality of Godhead. And where is the personality of Godhead? He's everywhere. And so with that shelter, a position of safety and well-being and happiness and protection and all desirable things, Krishna is that shelter. And Prabhupada uses this word regularly, feelingly. Sometime if you want, you can do a word search in database and put in feelingly and see the context in which Prabhupada uses that. That's the notion that I'm addressing here with from the heart. With genuine feelings. With genuine feelings means with spiritual feelings. Because someone who's attached can also feel, greed and lust and anger and frustration and something. They have also those kinds of feelings. But genuine feelings for shelter in the personality of Godhead. In the second canto, a phrase that Prabhupada uses again and again like a refrain is the false soldiers. Like, you know, soldiers, they give protection. Or fallible soldiers, that's the word, fallible soldiers. Fallible soldiers means thinking, like a Jamila, that when a position of danger came, he called his son, his fallible soldier. Here come the Yamadutas. What's a little baby going to do to help protect him from the Yamadutas? It definitely doesn't make any sense. But because that was his shelter, he called his son. Fortunate for him, in his earlier life, he had been a Vaishnav, so he had named his son Narayan, and so he called Narayan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, time and again, he called Narayan. Narayan certainly knew his intention. His intention wasn't, oh, Lord Narayan, it was his son. But even it was Abbas, or a shadow. Narayan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Narayan heard and received that call. And that's not feelingly calling. But when the Yamadutas came, it was feelingly. And again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, because of the circumstance, he remembered Lord Narayan. And he called, initially calling for his son, but his thoughts went to Lord Narayan, please protect me. Very feelingly. It's not that the message here is not that we need to be down and out in order to be to feelingly call. But the false shelter must be taken away. The false sense of shelter. The fallible soldier's idea. So let's just assume that we're conditioned souls who are not yet pure devotees. It's a fair assumption. That we have some mix. We have some genuine feeling for Krishna somewhere. Otherwise, we'd be somewhere else on the holiday weekend. There's some genuine feeling. There's also some mix. And that mix covers the genuine feeling. And so often our chanting, the common expression that we hear these days is mechanical chanting, as opposed to chanting from the heart. So I wanted to describe a very nice pastime from the Srimad Bhagavatam that involves Queen Kunti. It's also in Mahabharata. To contrast, certainly not the same as our position, but something like our position, where there's feeling, and even knowing but not feeling. Like, you know, we have some knowledge of who is Krishna and what our situation is and our circumstance, and still we don't feelingly call upon Krishna because we're not feeling shelter there. Why are we not feeling shelter there? We have false shelters. I'll give this example, Prabhupada's example, and then narrate this nice Bhagavatam Lila. You'll recognize it right away. Prabhupada's example, if we're holding on to something and it's tight in the grip of our hand and we want something else, we can't, like, I want my reading glasses. I have to let go of this something that's in my hand in order to pick up my reading glasses or the other thing that I want. In taking shelter, it's a twofold process. It's knowing and letting go. Then also taking shelter. It needs to be a conscious let go. With mindfulness and determination. Because the tendency is let go and then pick it up again. Let go and take shelter of Krishna. So that the pastime that's described, one of the pastimes described in the Bhagavatam that I'd like to refer to is contrasting Kunti and Dhritarashtra. Quite a contrast. The circumstance is that Pandu has died. The Pandavas, the sons of Pandu, along with Pandu and Kunti, have been in a place that Pandu likes, off in the forest. He liked that more than he liked being in the royal palace, although he was the king. He's the emperor of the world, and he liked being in the forest. Very peaceful circumstance. But as providence arranged it, he left his body. And that left Kunkunti with five Kshatriya boys to look after. So she decided, I think it's best if we go back to the palace. So they went back to the palace. And for all these years that the boys were growing up, Dhritarashtra has been acting as if he's the king. Although he can't accept the kingdom because he's blind. But he was attached to the notion that I really should be the king. I really want to be the king. I want to be the king! But I can't be the king. You get the attachment that's frustrated. or expectation that doesn't meet match reality. Frustration, formula for frustration. But his 100 sons were growing up, headed by Duryodhan, and they were powerful. So when the Pandavas came back, initially, they were treated like family members. They were also Kauravas, because they're sons of the Kuru dynasty, they're Kauravas. But the Pandavas were so excellent that Duryodhan couldn't stand it, because he had this thing in his heart called envy. He couldn't stand it, especially Bhima. Because the boys would play, boys would play, and Bhima would pick up one of the boys and toss them in the air and and any sporting games, Bhima would always overpower all the others. Duryodhan couldn't stand it. So in that diabolical mind of Duryodhan, the seed of a diabolical plan appeared, and he liked it very much. So he went to present the plan to his father. I want to kill Bhima. Dhritarashtra was shocked. How is this possible? How are you thinking like this? These are your cousins. And gave all of his nice reasons why this is an unthinkable thought. Give up this unthinkable thought. But Duryodhan was very clever, and he knew the attachment of his father. So he played on the attachment of his father to say, they have to go or I can't live. It's them or me. Father, listen to me. And he laid out his plan. No one will know, and Bhima will be gone. Here's the plan. There's this summer home, and we'll all go out together and have sporting games together, and I'll take charge of lunch. And I'll put so much poison in Bhima's food, he'll instantly die. And no one will know the reason why, and everyone will come back minus Bhima. And Dhritarashtra remained silent. Duryodhan knew he had his father. I'll take care of it, father. You don't have to do anything. And so the plan was executed. The poison was administered. You know the whole description, because I want to get to the other part. Bhima was then pushed into the water, tied up in ropes and pushed into the water, like dead body, and he was carried down into the nether region of Nagaloka, where the Nagas bit him, and with their poison of their fangs, it was the exact antidote to the poison that was administered to Bhima, and he was immediately relieved of that poisonous effect. Enough poison to kill 100 men. Instantly he came to external consciousness, and there he is, bound in ropes, and the Nagas were looking, oh, look at this. And Bhima was so strong, he just, like Hanuman, just burst the ropes. And the Nagas were frightened, and they ran to the king of the Nagas, and what do we do? This human being that so powerfully broke the ropes. He said, I know who that is. Let's go with my minister. And they made an arrangement that he would be honored. He was very happy. And the honor was he would be given some amrita, that is special for the Nagas, that even one swallow would make one as powerful as many elephants. And they brought several vessels. And we know the voracious appetite of Bhima. He hadn't eaten for a few hours. And he was very hungry. So he drank them all. And they were amazed. They had never seen anything like that before. And he felt drowsy and fell to sleep. And when he woke up, he was more powerful than Bhima before, invincible. They gave him a naga crown and a naga attire, and they honored him. And then the king of the Nagas said, "Your mother is very worried about you. We have Nagas have this ability to, like clairvoyance, we can understand what's going on elsewhere. Your mother is very worried. You should go back and pacify your mother." So meanwhile, back in Hastinapur, Kunti was in big anxiety. When the boys all came back, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra and her four sons, she asked them, "What happened? Where's Bhima?" "Well, we don't know. We couldn't find him anywhere." No, excuse me. He was resting. You know, Bhima, he ate a lot, and so he's resting. He'll be here in a while, but he didn't come. He didn't come back. So what did Kunti do? She went to Vidura, because Vidura was like a father unto the Pandavas, because he was uncle. And in the absence of Pandu, Uncle Vidura gave protection. The Yudhishthira Maharaj describes, like a mother bird extends her wings to give protection to the little birds. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but I have. It's, don't get near little birds, little ducklings, when there's a mother bird. Don't go near them. I did once, not knowing. And the mother bird went like this. And her tongue went out and started hissing. And started charging fearlessly. I ran. Fearfully. Right up on the steps. And she was right at the edge of the steps going, "Stay away from my little ducklings." "Okay, I'm away. But Vidura was like that. So Mother Kunti came to Uncle Vidura. "Oh, Uncle Vidura, Bhima hasn't come back. What do I do? What should I do? What's going on?" So immediately Vidura spoke very calmly and said, "Kunti, please remember the words of Vyasadeva. What did Vyasadeva say when your son was born? And what did Vyasadeva say about all of your sons?" Vyasadeva pronounced that they will live a long life, they will be practically invincible, and they will rule the world in grandeur. The words of Vyas can never be wrong. Whatever has happened, there's a plan of the Lord, and your son will come back safely. Please trust my words. Kunti's quality was such that just hearing, I'll say it again, just hearing from Vidura, she was completely pacified. That's shelter. Just hearing from Vidura. She trusted Vidura so completely. And he was right, and she knew he was right. But sometimes even we know something is right, we still worry. That's not Kunti, because she had shelter in Krishna. So now, back to Bhima. Bhima returns to Hastinapur. Duryodhan is amazed. but he didn't say anything. Bhima used his good discretion this time and got the Pandavas together and Kunti and Vidura and disclosed everything, because the Nagas had disclosed everything. That he had been poisoned, this was a plot to kill you. And after finishing, they all turned to Yudhisthira to decide what to do. Bhima's, just give me the word, I'll crush that little dirt powder. Yudhisthira very wisely said, we've just come back. For years the Pandavas and Dhritarashtra have been ruling the kingdom. They have all the alliances with all the other kings. We don't have that. We've just come back. Now is not the time to take any action. Be completely silent on this, but be very careful. Be very vigilant for our safety. On the pronouncement of Yudhisthira, that was the decision. Now in Dwaraka, Krishna's in Dwaraka at this time, and he knows that the Pandavas have just come back, and he knows the nature of Dhritarashtra. So he calls his ministers, and in particular he invites Akrura and gives Akrura a Krishna assignment. Wouldn't it be nice to have an assignment, direct assignment from Krishna? Akrura was very happy. The assignment was, I'm very concerned about the welfare and safety of the Pandavas and Kunti, because I know Dhritarashtra's nature. He's not only blind materially and therefore disqualified to become king, he's blind to his own attachments. And because of his blindness to his own attachments, he can do anything. The Pandavas are an obstacle to Dhritarashtra's plan. I want you to go to Hastinapur, study the situation thoroughly, and come back with a report so we can make a plan accordingly. Now, Krishna is omniscient. He doesn't need Akrura to go there. But he's giving Akrura some service. So Akrura is very happy, given some service from Krishna. So he goes to Hastinapur. And he's Uncle Akrura. He's part of the royal family. And so he's received with great dignity. He's a minister. So after the reception, he then immediately goes to Vidura and tells Vidura why he came. Krishna sent me on a mission. So while Vidura and Akrura are speaking, Kunti enters. And as soon as Kunti sees Akrura, it's a very beautiful sequence that very naturally happens. Kunti has her own family, Pandu and Pandu's sons, but Kunti also has her father and her siblings that are part of the Yadu dynasty. And the Yadu dynasty is all in Dwaraka. And Akrura has just come from Dwaraka. She starts to ask, how are all my relatives? How is this one? How is that one? How are they doing? But because of emphasis, Kunti's shelter in Krishna, she starts speaking about Krishna. She gets so absorbed in her shelter in Krishna, she starts speaking to Krishna as if Krishna is also there. She's on this spontaneous platform of love for Krishna. And she speaks to Krishna. Read the prayers, they're very beautiful. She glorifies Krishna, you are this, you are the Supreme Lord, just like she does in her prayers in the 8th chapter. You are the super soul and the heart of every living being. You are the controller of every living being, and yet you're appearing as if you are one of us. This is most amazing. And I know that you are very affectionate upon your own devotees. And my sons, the Pandavas, they're your devotees. They know no shelter but you, just like me. And Krishna, they're in great danger. Please do something. I'm in great distress. And she begins crying before Krishna. Akura and Vidura are amazed at the exclusive shelter and love that she has for Krishna. But they're both very wise counselors, and so they glorify her sons. These are not ordinary boys. Besides the fact that they're very dear to Krishna, Krishna will surely protect them. They're the sons of most exalted demigods. They're invincible. Surely there's a plan for their well-being. And Kunti clears the tears from her eyes and becomes pacified, because very feelingly she has taken shelter in Krishna. So although the circumstances are very difficult, life-threatening difficult, using our modern word, stressful, maha-stressful, she's completely pacified because she's feelingly taking shelter of Krishna. So now Akura understands the situation. But he's a very quality minister, so he decided, best if I stay for a few months and thoroughly understand all that's going on so I can give a complete report to Krishna. So he does that. And also so that Dhritarashtra will not have a doubt about his intention, his even-mindedness as a minister. But when he's completed that stay, now we're going to contrast Dhritarashtra. He decides, I'm ready to give my report to Krishna, but before I go, I'd like to at least try to advise Dhritarashtra to take proper shelter of Krishna. Well, we know he doesn't, but here's the message that Akura delivers. And it's not the first time that Dhritarashtra has heard this, because Vidura has also delivered the same message, and he'll deliver it again and again. He gets lots of chances to, like, you know, straighten up and fly right, but he can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it, because he won't. Because he's too attached, and he says so. So Akura said, my dear son of Vijayatravirya, Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, he specifically spoke like that because he wasn't. He was the son of Vyasadeva, not the son of Vijayatravirya. And the son of Vijayatravirya should become the king, but you're not even qualified to be identified as the son of Vijayatravirya, O son of Vijayatravirya. You're a pretender. My dear son of Vijayatravirya, you know the law of progeniture that rules the land. The law of progeniture is the Pandavas are the heirs to the throne. Do you think that by greedily taking that which is the property of someone else, that you will actually be able to enjoy this property? Do you think that that's possible? It's not possible. Dhritarashtra, give up this idea. The next point he made was, however, I know you're too attached to do that. So let me explain what's the consequence. If you manage to retain the kingdom by illegal means, by neglect of religious law, what will be the consequence? Supposing you have the kingdom and you rule, and your sons, who are not trained in this discipline of proper religious principle, there will be a reaction. They themselves, it is understood that he gave some example of like a fish swallowing another fish. The larger fish swallows the smaller fish. You will be like that larger fish, swallowing your sons and the property of your sons by your irreligious activity. It will be spoiled. History has shown this again and again. Very powerful kingdoms have been completely destroyed by the descendants of the original builder of that kingdom, by their sons that are unqualified. If you don't stand by religious principle, how will that be within the ruling of your sons? It will all be destroyed. You will be destroyed, and they will be destroyed. Dhritarashtra, give up this plan. He then explained, when you were young, you were blind, and your younger brother, Pandu, cared for you like a father, because Vyas was not there. He cared for you like a father. And now you want to destroy his sons? What religious principle is this? How do you expect to be successful in your diabolical plan, Dhritarashtra? Give up your plan. He gave some other arguments also. Dhritarashtra listened silently. He heard everything. And when it was his turn to speak, he said, my dear uncle, everything that you have said is absolutely true. Krishna, listen, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's descended into this world to relieve the earth of the burden of those kings who do not live by religious principle. Indirectly, I shall be destroyed by Krishna. But what can I do? I am too attached. And because I'm too attached, I can't follow the good advice you've given me. I can't do it. And by the will of Providence, there is something in store for each one of us, and what is in store for me is my fate. Fallible soldiers. He was beyond most people that don't understand they're taking shelter of fallible soldiers. He understood, I am taking shelter of fallible soldiers who will be destroyed and everything will be taken, but what can I do? I'm too attached. He was more elevated than us. He was actually an elevated personality, except that he was too much attached. So he couldn't feelingly take shelter of Krishna. Instead, he took shelter of his sons and the hope that Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Sri would become his, at least one of them, at least a kingdom. Great wealth. Great power and influence over others. And we're not Dhritarashtras, but in that extreme sense, you know, murder plots to get what we want and so on. But in the sense that we continue to hold on to that which is false shelters, we do that. We know what is right, and yet we don't take shelter feelingly. So there, the message, going back to our Gopuram chart here, to chant from the heart, there has to be a positive desire to do so, and from the strength of that positive desire to do so, willingness to let go of false shelters. Letting go of false shelters doesn't mean abdication of responsibility, being a recluse bum or something, being careless and carefree about the responsibilities of life and the relationships that we have with people and the way to properly uphold them. Doesn't mean that. It means executing those things or discharging those duties where our real shelter is Krishna. Our real shelter is Krishna. From the heart, feelingly. Give another example of feelingly chanting the holy name. We didn't have time constraints that would narrate the whole description of Haridas Thakur being challenged by the Qazi of Puliya to stop chanting. But I'll just do the little cameo part. It was an envious member of the administration, the Qazi's administration, and he really, like that lady last night that didn't like our chanting. He really didn't like the attraction that was going to Haridas Thakur for his chanting and his purity. He couldn't stand it. Like this lady last night. I didn't repeat to you what she said to me, but it wasn't nice. Some street language she said. If you don't, I'm gonna. Nasty person. So he went and complained to the Qazi. This Muslim person has given up his high birth and he's taken to Hindu ways of chanting the names of the Hindu God, and people are admiring him and they're giving up their Muslim faith and taking shelter of this Hindu practice. You have to stop this person, otherwise the king will take your life. If he comes to here, you're finished. I want you to punish him. So he was brought, long description in Chaitanya Bhagavat, but he was brought before the Qazi. And the Qazi said, as soon as he was in the presence of Haridas Thakur, he could recognize he's a saintly person. Just being in the presence of a truly saintly person, one can recognize. Because he could recognize. My dear brother, why don't you just give up this chanting and take to the practices of your Muslim faith and there'll be no problem? Why don't you do that? That would be a very nice solution. Haridas' reply was, you are the representative of the king, and it is your right and it is your duty to punish those who are offenders to the laws of the government. So you may punish me as you wish. But my chanting of Hari, God's holy name, is something that I cannot check. In other words, it's coming from my heart. So if you, I have a suggestion. The suggestion is that whatever punishment you would give to a Hindu that became Muslim, you should do that same for me, for a Muslim who became Hindu. That would be fair, fair punishment. But if you feel that the punishment that's right is you kill me, then I suggest that you could cut my body into 1,000 little pieces and I would still not stop chanting. Because it's coming from the soul. The body is irrelevant. It's an instrument, it's making the sound, but the chanting is from the soul. I cannot stop. Well, punish me as you wish. So the Qazi turned to his administrator and said, okay, what punishment would you like? You decide. He said, killing him wouldn't be good enough. We should show by example, beat him in all the marketplaces of Puglia. And everyone can see, if you defy the Qazi, this is what will happen to you. So don't do the same. That's what you should do. Beat him until he's dead. So that was the decision. Now the example is, Haridas's chanting was not, here's an expression of Bhakti Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur. Chanting is not lip deep, but heart deep. That's chanting. So we can make a sound. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur teaches that you can make a machine that makes that sound. Especially now, they can make all kinds of sounds. So many dialects they can make. But that's, or you can train a bird to chant. I know someone that had, I mean, we had in Mayapur a parrot that could chant. But when danger came, wah, 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 wah. There's a whole story behind it. It happened. They placed a little cage, a bird cage, and the parrot inside the cage, and the devotees trained the parrot to chant. Haribol! 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 And then he got a little more sophisticated. Jai Radhe! Jai Radhe! Jai Radhe! And you can imagine that people would stand around and say all day long, Jai Radhe and Haribol, and the parrot would, you know, do his parrot program. But there was a hailstorm. And then when the hailstorm came, it wasn't Jai Radhe and Haribol. Ah, ah, ah! So, lip deep and heart deep. Heart deep is when it doesn't matter what's going on externally. It can be this or that. It's going to go on because it's heart deep, because it's from the heart, it's from the genuine shelter in Krishna. We need protection from opulence if some opulence comes our way in life, because we could become deluded into becoming the so-called enjoyer of that opulence. And if the opulence is taken away, or that which seems to be our false shelters, our fallible soldiers, then it's squawk, squawk, squawk. And at least the mind is going like that while we're chanting Hare Krishna. So we need to take shelter of Krishna. I'll tell one other little story. This just came to my attention yesterday. Someone contacted me about an experience they just had where they have a 2.5-year-old nephew. So think of somebody, you know, that's 2.5. And the parents of that nephew are not devotees, but the parents are happy to have the devotee take care of their nephew. So since 2 months old, that child has been going to the temple with their relative. So this just happened, that the child wanted to go to the temple, and the devotee had something to do, so they weren't ready to go to the temple, but the child wanted to go to the temple. They kept demanding. You know how children, demanding! So let's go to the, okay, we'll go to the temple. They stayed there for 4 hours. So the devotee got to chant the rounds. So the 2.5-year-old, I don't know what they did for 4 hours at the temple, but then, so they went home, and then putting the child to sleep, the practice was to chant the Maha Mantra before the child goes to sleep. And the child was very restful. So then the devotee was taking care of getting things ready for the child for the next morning. And the child called out several times, Krishna, heart. Just happened yesterday. Krishna, heart. Krishna, heart. They were amazed. The effect, if one is receptive to the sound of Krishna's name can touch one's heart, and one can then call from the heart. So it's not a matter of sophistication. You have to have a PhD or at least an MBA or something. You have to have, you know, high education so that you know how to chant properly. Shruta. Good education. The heart has to become soft so that one can take shelter of Krishna. When Krishna becomes your shelter and you chant in that mood, you're chanting from the heart. Something that blocks us from doing that is our false shelter. So it's our responsibility as sadhakas, those of us that aren't yet at Queen Kunti's level or Haridas Thakur's level, to follow their example and let go of false shelters. It's not that Kunti didn't care about her sons because they're false shelters. She was a mother. She cared deeply about her sons, but her shelter was Krishna. She was wanting lovingly, not just dutifully, but lovingly to care for her sons, but her shelter was Krishna. And guess what? When you have shelter in Krishna, she didn't even have to call. Krishna sent Akura. Krishna protects his devotees. That's faith. But that's reality. That's Krishna. So in the course of this festival of the holy name, see if you can remember some of these points just made. Even just Krishna, heart. Just remember that when you're chanting. Chant from the heart. Letting other false shelters fade by taking proper shelter of Krishna with genuine feeling. The example that Prabhupada gives in the purport is it's the inference is Draupadi. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. She was strong. Draupadi, what was his name? Jayadrath. You know, she socked him. He fell to the ground. She was powerful. But he was more powerful. He got up and kidnapped her. So when Dushasana was trying to disrobe her, she was holding on. But she realized, it's hopeless. Hey Krishna, Hey, go, no shelter but Krishna. Doesn't mean we don't do practical things in life. We do practical things in life. We do them with shelter in Krishna. And chanting should be with genuine shelter in Krishna. Strive like that. And Krishna's reciprocation is there. Okay. So I'll end and see if there's any comments or questions. Yes, Donna Kelly.
In the beginning, you gave the example of if you want to pick up one option, So you said that we have to purposely and willfully give up all shelters.
Yes.
So how does one give up their all shelters if they don't know what those all shelters are?
Well, Guru Sadhu and Shastra will help us understand what they are. In short, shelter meaning that which is my position of safety, well-being, protection. Like, you know, what's in the items of surrender unto Krishna, besides anukalyasya sankalpa pratikalyasya varjanam, that's this letting go and accepting. But then there's four others. What is my maintenance? What is my protection? That's shelter. Am I dedicating myself in the mood of devotion unto Krishna? Because otherwise, if the answer is no, or, well, not completely, then there's some other false shelters. So what are those other false shelters? We have persons that are guiding us in our spiritual life. They can help us point out what are those false shelters. And Scripture will confirm, and our own self-honesty will also verify. Yep, it's true. Krishna will give the intelligence by these various means if there is a sincere desire to come to Krishna's shelter. In Dhritarashtra's case, there wasn't. And he knew what his false shelters were because he had the advice to let him know. And he accepted. He accepted it when Vidura also said. So he knew. So in our case, we may not know. Find a Kura or a Vidura somewhere and seek their counsel. Read the scriptures carefully. Someone was sharing with me this past week that they took a little reading break and very conscientiously they were reading second canto, Bhagavatam, and it became crystal clear to them where their false shelters were. And they felt so happy compared to the anxiety and distress they were in when they were in that false shelter position. So Scripture can also, if our heart is open, indicate Guru Sadhu Shastra. It's a good starting point to assume we have some, rather than I don't have false shelters. We'll discuss this in the next, a little bit about humility, recognizing our limitations and so on. Next session. Anyone else? Look at that, it reaches. Very good. Louder. when we're able to recognize those false shelters, and the kitchen is louder than you.
How to sustain the determination, and because even the recognition is there, but then there is not enough determination that can be sustained over a period of time to let go of them.
Okay.
What makes the determination strong, and how to go forward with the letting go of that?
Excellent question. Something that's familiar territory for all of us. I'll give you three part answer. One is directly Srila Prabhupada said, determination is increased by voluntarily accepting austerities. He gave the example of Ekadasi, the appearance days of the Lord where we fast. That's a Vaishnava austerity. By observing voluntary austerities, it helps control the senses, which requires also control of the mind to control the senses. And that will strengthen our determination in devotional service. That was one. Another is close relationships with advanced devotees. That in relationship, in a strong spiritual relationship, there is strength that will add determination to our vrata, our conviction, our effort. And the third is an overall purity or spiritual. As we advance spiritually, our determination also becomes stronger. So, in other words, our determination capacity at this stage is different than our determination capacity in more advanced stage, less than a more advanced stage. So as we advance, our determination will naturally become stronger. Be patient and persevere on the path, recognizing not that as I become more advanced, I don't have to worry so much. I'll just be, you know, more complacent, because the harassing features of Maya are less. So now I can relax and take a vacation from devotional service a bit. But rather, increase in one's determination. Yes? Can you take the microphone? It'll help.
This is a how-to question.
How to.
Maharaj, by a lot of mercy, there is a reaching out for spiritual shelters, spiritual teachers in challenging times. But that quality with which Kunti, the openness of heart that she had to the instructions that come, is not there. And there's a struggle between aspects and emotions, and on some level, accepting with faith what is coming, and knowing that those people are my best well-wishers. So I would like to understand, what is the struggle and how to go beyond it?
The struggle specifically is accepting Krishna's arrangements on the one hand, and taking shelter of Krishna to address a particular circumstance. Is that what you're...
The struggle is between theoretically accepting the instructions
from the heart,
these emotions and affects that seem to overpower.
That question is very similar to the one we just heard. It's the theme of this morning's classes, chanting from the heart, which I expressed as where we take shelter. So it's a question, say, you know, saying it back, your question is a question of where is our shelter. We're accustomed to our mind being our shelter, our dearmost friend, who we can trust. He'll always stay by our side and be very dear and kind to us, our dearmost mind, as our dearmost friend and counselor. And the other shelter is the other shelter. So where do we see shelter? The other, so one is conditioning, and the other is the spiritual path that's been opened, the option that's been opened to us to give us relief from the mind, and that fallible shelter, the fallible soldier. So it's making a choice, and, you know, continue making the proper choices. Now, the other question is, well, yes, but I don't have, you know, it's, I sometimes say, but then the conditioning is pushing me the other direction. So how do I get more determined? As the relationships become strong, then that's where the shelter is. And that picks one up from that struggling position. Struggling between this and that. There's a discerning or discriminating factor of intelligence called spiritual intelligence that Krishna gives. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yinamam Upinanti Te. But then, what's the first part of that verse? Esham Tvantagatam Papam. No, that's not it. How does it begin? Yeah. Desham Satadiyotanam Vajatam Piti Purvakam. So work on that. And Krishna will give you the discriminating factor that says yes to this and no to that. My dear mind, sit down. You've been in charge for too long. You had your chance. You didn't do so well. Let me tell you how you didn't do so well. You didn't do so well. I'm going over here. Yes? Let's wait for the microphone. This is a nice space, isn't it? Except for there's no wall between us and the kitchen.
Guru Maharaj, I was thinking about, is this making the choice of taking shelter of Krishna versus the other thing? Is it possible that it is an event?
No, it's ongoing. It's a process, not an event. It's a series of events. Taking shelter, taking shelter, taking shelter, taking shelter, taking shelter, taking shelter. A series of such events.
So in case of Queen Kunti, that she has made those choices.
Oh, yes, she did.
So when a bigger thing comes,
yes.
It's
causing things. Yes, right. She was more than that. She was on spontaneous devotional service. She turned to Krishna, but when she turned to Krishna, she just became ecstatic. She was talking as if Krishna was there. Like Ritrasura did the same. He was giving a little Bhagavatam class to King Indra. King Indra, do your duty. You're the king of heaven. And Vishnu said, you'll be victorious. Hey, Indra, you know, come on, get it together, will you, Indra? We have the same master. And then he started speaking about the master. And he completely went away from, you know, the circumstance of being confronted by Indra and just started speaking spontaneous glorification of the personality of Godhead and went into this zone of ecstatic devotion to the personality of Godhead. Spontaneous devotional service. So then, you know, going back to these two prior questions, and as well your question, later on, Maharaj Pariksit says, how did that happen? How does one come to such a level of devotional service? When most people, and then he gives the, you know, some most people are down here, and some people here, some, but that's so rare. How did he get there? And don't, that means, how do we get there? By association of saintly persons. That was the answer that he received. Angira and then Narada gave their association to King Chitraketu, who took shelter of their instructions. He didn't have to. He could have said, like Dhritarashtra said, well, what you're saying I makes sense, I agree with it, but I can't do it. He didn't say, I can't do it. He took shelter of their instructions. And we can do it. Also, what's checking us? Our attachments. Do we have to maintain attachments? No. We're attached to our attachments. We don't have to. So it's a, as you expressed it, it's a series of free will choices going in the right direction. That's progress. Even their little ones, go in the right direction. Make progress. Keep making incremental decisions in the right direction. You'll progress to that stage. But let it be not just, you know, doing something or getting something done or like that, you know, fruitive. Let it be shelter-taking decisions. Consciously, deliberately. And the other side, deliberately letting go of the dictates of the mind that says, here's some bad advice. Why don't you do this? So, well,
Sure, but there's a challenge when you letting go of false and shelters, that you're still in contact with those false shelters. It's almost like someone who is an alcoholic working in a wine shop or something like that. You have to, you know that you have to give it up, but you're still in contact with them. Practical advice on how to deal with that situation.
It's first of all, it's our, what's the right word? It's our plight. Once coming to the material world because of misuse of free will, we have to take responsibility for that act of free will. That is, we have to get ourselves out of the material world, being in the material world. And persons that I know that have some addiction problem, they manage to find, you know, that object of their addiction when the rest of us don't even see it. But because they're addicted, they find it, or it finds them. You know, it's like, you know, that's their burden. So part of it is, this, because this is Lord Brahma's prayer. Tat te dukham pam susi vikshamano. Brahma has, he did a no-no. A very bad no-no. He stole Krishna's coward boys. He kidnapped Krishna's cowherd boys and put him in a cave, and the calves and put them in a cave. And the calves are as dear to Krishna as the cowherd boys, and he kidnapped them. Oh, big reaction. He accepted. So this is a direct answer to your question. He accepted. I own some responsibility for this wrong act. I accept the reaction. But, my dear Lord, I pray to you that my mind not budge one inch from your devotional service. Let the reaction come. Let my mind not budge one inch from your devotional service, knowing that by so doing, I will become the inheritor of the property of my Father. That's the kingdom of God. I'll go back to Godhead by so doing. Just that one thing. So this is the determination. That, my dear Lord Krishna, please help me with such determination. Let my mind not budge one inch from your devotional service. And if one is in the mood of executing the service of the Lord, one's protected. Let your mind go away from the position of service to the Lord. You're at risk by that contaminated atmosphere. I could give so many examples, but that's the principle. There's shelter in the Lord's lotus feet. There's shelter in His acts of devotion unto Him. Even we may be in a contaminating atmosphere and our hearts are polluted by that same contamination. There's shelter. That's our recourse. It's due to my misdeeds, I'm in this contaminated atmosphere. And I have desires that resonate with that contaminated atmosphere. Some, more or less than the next person. I accept. My business, in other words, let my intelligence, this is the discriminate, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tham, the intelligence of Brahma is, don't direct your energy towards minimizing the problem. Like, make it comfortable. Maximize directing your intelligence to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Let there be some practical activities, that's fine. The practical activity should be with maximum devotion to the Supreme Personality of God and for His service. Not just my happiness or I don't want to suffer. For His service. That's the shelter. Jai Jagannath.
Thank you for a very beautiful class. I have a question. Thank you, Chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita. Before Krishna gives in that chapter, before he gives a description of the spiritual world, you know, he gives verses like the Kali and the Shasha Kama. So, the material world is like a very after you hear that part, looking for the shelter of the spiritual world seems very appeasing.
Appealing.
So, in the same way, is it a healthy exercise, or should we make it an exercise to maybe contemplate or even write down how our above shelters, not only are they damaging to ourselves and damaging to society at large, so that we can get a clear picture of how that shelter is very destructive, taking shelter of Krishna?
Sure. That was an easy answer. It helps in both departments, the department of letting go of the false shelters and letting go of the false shelters, looking at the more positive shelter in Krishna's service. Okay, it looks like breakfast is more than ready. So we'll end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.